Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kidlit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 144 with David Ezra Stein, author, illustrator, most recently of Tad and Dad, published by Nancy Paulson Books. David's other works include Leaves, I'm My Own Dog, and Interrupting Chicken, which earned a Caldecott honor. David's newest story is a tribute to fatherhood, to your kid thinking you're the absolute greatest and never wanting to spend a single minute apart from you. It's a universal story and one I think is extra special to share at bedtime if you're a dad. Plus, you'll never believe the commonplace drawing tool David used to create the illustration. So awesome! I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device through your preferred podcast host or by visiting the Let's Get Busy homepage directly. Rating the podcast through stars or reviews on iTunes actually helps the podcast reach a greater audience, which also translates to iTunes recommending Let's Get Busy to other listeners, which is a very good thing. Definitely do that if you want to help bring these chats to even more ears. And on that note, it's time to start episode number 144 of the podcast with David Ezra Stein. Let's get busy. Busy podcast, David Ezra Stein. I am excited to talk to you tonight.
Thanks, Matthew. Nice to be here with you.
Also, very nice to be leading the chat with Dad Talk, because well, as I said to you before, with a 5 week old in the house as well as a big brother, it is it's good to have a dad to commiserate with.
yeah, you know, in my neighborhood, there's just tons of dads that I've become friends with, and I hear this universal theme of dads getting kicked out of the bed, basically. So I know I'm not alone, so that's a wonderful feeling to know that, you know, at 2 a.m, some other dad is probably sleeping on the couch or trying to sleep on the couch or trying to sleep in the bed and getting kicked in the head.
Well, I can't think of a better transition than to talk about your new book. David, your new book, Tad and Dad, it's wonderful. It's one of your best. I love your stuff. And this, I know I had said that there's this connection already that I'm going through being a dad, but I feel like this is something that just that the kid wanting to be with you all the time, wanting nothing more than to be close and being a dad who's not getting much sleep and trying to be a good dad, but also maintain some sort of functionality.
Yes.
I loved your story. It was really special. It was really a sweet story.
Thank you. Yeah, it's for you. This is for you. This is for us. This is for us and our kids, you know, that we go through the hard times together, go through the joyful times together. You're kind of making me tear up a little bit with what you just said before, so I apologize.
But,
you know, it's like, it's it's something that has changed the way I write, I think, you know, being a dad of two kids. It's from the inside out now, rather than trying to imagine like what are kids going through that aren't my kids, and you know, from the outside observing other people's kids, and you know, it's just a different ball game, and I think it's a very deep amount of feeling that I put into the book that hopefully, you know, other parents will pick up on that.
Oh, see, I love that sentiment, David. I love the idea that now that you're experiencing fatherhood and you're like, whatever it is, like six-ish years in from pregnancy to your full-grown, you know, five or whatever year old boy, that now you are pulling from those memories that you have with them to share these stories, because that, I don't know, that's a special thing, because now it really is you writing this story to dads during story time saying, I was there too.
Yeah.
Let's enjoy this moment together. And there is so much to enjoy about it. I mean, like I said, there's it's long days at work, and being there for me in the library, being there for these kids and giving them my all, mm-hmm. and then coming home and being dad and having a kid that wants nothing more than to play with me outside and to just enjoy time with me before bedtime. And mm-hmm. You know, Tad and Dad, it's the adoration that, I mean, you just unflinchingly have Tad in this story love his father and just want to be next to his dad, and that it's a sweet thing. It's a really sweet experience.
Yeah, you know, I'm a dad advocate, and I think dads are great, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a dad, but actually I am, because I didn't know how great dads are, because we have all these different hats to wear, like you do at work, and you know, you have your work kids, and then you have your home kids, and they need you, and they need you to just give 100%, and you know, that's something that maybe is not celebrated that much in our culture, is the fact that dads have to do all these different roles and in the same day, you know, and moms are wonderful. Of course, moms are great. I'm a little biased because I'm a dad, but you know, I think that's all in there. And I think, it's kind of a love note to dads.
Yeah. I mean, I also think about how many books, are out there, how many picture books are out there that do explicitly celebrate the relationship between a dad and his child or children. And in that way, too, that this becomes a special part of that story time. To the dads that are able to get up to story time and be a part of story time, and hopefully it's a lot of dads, mm-hmm. here's a story that is an extension of the relationship you have to the kid you're reading to. And that's just something that extends beyond. And I don't know. So I was talking, I don't know, last month or something to Matt Cordell, who just released Home. That was another one of these special connection stories when you're reading, you are having this intimate moment with your child and also kind of telling them a story about yourself. I mean, when I read this, I've read Tad and Dad to my son a couple times now already. And it's that feeling of like, hey buddy, this is us we're reading about here. We are the frogs. We are, this is us. And it's, I don't know, to see yourself in a story like that.
Yeah, it's a cool journey that we're taking together, and we're messing it up in some ways, but we're also getting something beautiful out of it at the same time. And maybe, you know, even going back a generation or two, our dads or our grandparents, our grandfathers didn't really have the same role that we do nowadays as dads. So I think it's almost a new frontier or new kind of journey that we're figuring out as we go along. So to me, that's an exciting thing to explore in a book, in the realm of picture books, you know.
Yeah.
It's a kind of new ground, perhaps, I hope, and something that is exhilarating to treat in a book format.
Well, I think that there's something really fun and memorable to say, to speak for, in the ways that we do mess up, because those are the things that you remember. Those fun things.
There's a couple of things I would have done differently. Yeah. So far. My son is only 5 and a half, but yeah.
And so you were telling me that the idea for 10 Dad actually came when he was just young and sharing a bed with you, right? And then came back again with your second child.
Yeah, you know, I wrote it initially when he was about 2 or so, and he was sharing the bed with us, and just he would be like the cross piece of the letter H, you know. We would be on each end, and he would be lying across in the middle, and one person would get punched and the other person would get kicked during the night. So I wrote this story, and I thought it was cool, and I had other things going on, so I put it aside. And when it was time to do a new book with Penguin, I had, by the time that happened, I had sort of reapproached this story, and I wrote a new version of it that was more like a flashback. Like, Ted, remember when you were so little that you didn't have any arms and legs, and you just tickled me with your tail, and then you got a little bigger, and you jumped into my lily pad. And then this whole story was happening with Tad sitting on the dad's head. And then finally he was like, now get off my head. So it was like a whole flashback episode, basically. And so they liked it, and they signed it up as a book. And then we decided a little later, like, this flashback thing is really hard to illustrate, and it's kind of a little awkward because it's not happening in the present enough. So we just kind of scrapped that version of the story, and I kind of had to go back to square one, and I wrote about maybe 40 or 50 versions of the story.
Holy cow! Going,
yeah, go, wow. I mean, this was not an easy book to write, and the ending wasn't quite right, so even going back to the first version, the ending didn't quite seem right, so I just kept, I mean, it was like the hard way to write a book. I just kept at it and kept at it and forced myself to do it. And eventually, it was kind of a revelation to me. I ended up changing the whole way I work, basically, because of this book, because I needed to infuse more fun and excitement into my author-illustrator routine and get myself fired up so I could work on this project, which was daunting at the time. So in the long run, it was really great, actually.
Yeah, and you've got this wonderful ending line. I love that you let Tad end the story. I love that he just says, I was right. I knew he would miss me. Just giving the kid the last word is just, I don't know. It's
funny sweet. You say that. I mean, the breakthrough that I had when I was trying to write it was that I finally decided to put it in the first person and put it in Tad's voice, and that's when because I couldn't get a sense of the character until I did that, and I was like, oh, this is Tad. Okay, Tad, he loves his dad, and he really just wants to be just like his dad, and he wants to be near him all the time, and he looks up to him, and he's telling the story. So suddenly the whole story just kind of told itself after many months of just kind of banging my head against the drawing board, you know, against the writing board, I guess.
That's awesome that it just took that sort of unlocking like that. I love your illustrations, just in general, by the way. I love your illustrations. This is an example, though, Tad and Dad, that you have this like frantic, loose line. I love the way that you draw. I love your line. Are you using... What tool do you use to draw? Is this like a, I don't know.
This particular book, I actually used a Crayola marker, like the thick Crayola markers that you use in school. And I just, I think it was red or blue. And I copied it onto watercolor paper so it would become black and it would become waterproof.
Oh, because nice. It's markers. Kids can totally do this.
I mean, kids do some of the best art.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, even the tools are, these are, I guess what I'm saying is these are tools that they know.
it so happens that Crayola markers are amazing because they have this really pointy, sharp tip, and then they have the wide, you know, it gets wider as it goes up. So they have a very wide surface for thick lines. And if you use them very gently on their side, you can get this really cool line that breaks up, and it's almost like a sumi brush.
It looks like a brush, yeah. Japanese,
like, brush stroke thing. So, I mean, it, you know, I've been kind of avoiding using them because I couldn't figure out how to make it work exactly. But I would always do the dummies in Crayola marker because it's so expressive and gets the gesture down, and it's, like, easy to use, and it feels good. It's very thick, so it feels, like, stable in the hand. And even for adults, not for just for kids. But, you know, I finally gave myself permission and figured out how to just use a Crayola marker to do the book.
That's awesome. The effect is fantastic. It looks, I mean, like, I'm staring at it now going like, oh, my word. That is that's what that is. That's marker. But I just love that. I think you're the first person I've ever talked to that is illustrated, base illustrated in Crayola marker. But that is not to say that people shouldn't be doing it. It's amazing. And then your watercolor on top of it. I love that you've got, again, just like this loose, like your line, your watercolor is loose too. I love the way that the colors sometimes flow out of, I don't know, whatever the object is, especially looking at your setting, your background, the plants there, that it kind of washes out of that slightly into the sky or into the water. It makes everything as it should, because it's a pond story. It just makes everything feel wet and drippy and part of the same environment.
Mm-hmm. And the designer, Ryan Toman, he added some extra splotches of color, actually, like in near the text or on the corner of the page. He kind of amplified that effect by sampling some colors that I gave him and using them as a design element in the book. So it almost seems like this book has been to the swamp, you know, like it's got a little bit of purple and green mud on it here and there.
Yeah, no, that's great. Oh, that's great. I love that. Wait, so you work with a designer on your books?
Yeah, I work with the art director and designer.
Right.
Usually.
So is that, having no experience illustrating myself, I'm going to ask potentially what feels like a dumb question to me, but I know that you're a nice guy, so I can ask it. So are you then essentially for these spreads creating just separate illustrations and then working with this designer to upload them, I guess, digitally to manipulate text and figure out where how everything will look on the page then?
Not in the final art stage like what you see in the book, but I think he did take my text and lay it out, and then he sent me like blank pages with the text in place. So I can design my compositions and the artwork around where the text is going to be.
That makes sense.
You know, and I have a big hand in figuring out the pacing. I mean, that's really part of writing a book is, you know, where the page turns, because that's a dramatic pause where you're going to find out what happens next.
But the designer and the editor helping you along that way to, again, make sure that it is cohesive and that it does match your vision as well as, I don't know, appeal to the reader or something. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. You write great books. What are we worried about?
Thanks, man. No worries at all.
It's the magic of creating books. There's so much that happens behind the scenes. I mean, all we do is we pick them up from the library and we read them, and we just know that there's some dude or some woman's name on the cover, and they must have made it. But the process behind it
fools me too. When I look at the book, I'm like, oh, there it is. That's it. I mean, that's all it is. It's just the work. That's how it was from the beginning, and that's how it is now. No, that's not true at all. I mean, it's really, there's a lot of like blood and sweat and everything
Oh my.
That goes into Well, not always, but, you know, for me, I feel like it's a different book every time. It's a different experience. It's a different journey. So there's going to be some rough patches, and, you know, it takes me a month or two to find the look of the book. So I'm just messing around with different techniques, and it feels like I don't know what I'm doing for part of that time, because I'm just like, what did I just do on the paper? Like, that is weird. And then eventually these elements come together, and I'm like, yes, that's starting to look like a book to me. So, you know, it's almost like the exploration is dangerous, but then the payoff can be high.
Well, that right there is what makes you an artist, is that the exploration in I love the, I don't know what I'm doing, but it turns out, okay.
But yeah, that's something you have to work through and then get out the other side and you see the light.
No doubt.
After a while,
yeah. You mentioned earlier that that this was the next book you were doing for Penguin. So do you work, I guess, directly with the different, or with some different editors at different houses? So you, I don't know, are working on a book for Penguin now, and then we'll be working on a book for, I don't know, Candlewick or something? Or do you work through an agent and they sell your work? What does that look like for you?
I do have an agent, but it's sort of like the relationships were there before. Well, Candlewick came in after I had an agent. But that's really just the business side of it. So,
yeah.
You know, and also helping me to hook up with the right people in the first place.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the actual project, it's kind of like, okay, David, what's in your sketchbook? And, what would you like to be working on? And I'm like, okay, I have these 10 ideas for books, because I always have, like, you know, 20, 30 ideas. So I come in with my sketchbook or my list of ideas, and I say, here they are. And, you know, we come together and we meet in the middle and of where everybody sort of how everybody feels about those ideas and which ones are exciting. So it's like a creative relationship with the publisher.
Oh, nice.
To map out what the next project is going to be.
Well, that's great. And it's nice that, I mean, I know that different publishers sort of have their different, I don't know, feel. Some books just feel right with a certain publisher. There's a certain, I feel like with Candlewick, their books, not that they share a theme or something, but that they feel like Candlewick books, the way that, to me, Chronicle books feel like Chronicle books and Penguin books feel like Penguin. The different publishers tend to, I don't know if it's that they have a certain taste or something like that, but they feel like they have a
culture. I mean, some of them have a very strong culture and they have a sensibility and like when you look at the catalog, everything kind of seems cut from the same cloth somehow.
It kind of fits, yeah, doesn't it? Yeah. So I guess that kind of ends up informing perhaps where some of your stories will end up being, I guess, shopped at different publishers. That, this feels more like something in line with what these people make. I don't know.
Yeah, and the editor, the particular editor too, and the imprint it's sort of like they're a big influence on what is going to be the next project too, out of the choices given.
Yeah,
I guess.
Well, you've got so many great books out, and so many of the illustrators in particular that I talk to on this podcast all talk about how much they adore your line work and the stuff that you create. Especially, so many of us are fans of Leaves.
Oh yeah,
that book is just that's just gorgeous. It's just, I mean, this is what you do, but it's again that really loose line, that emotive line that works really well.
Yeah, that was a bamboo pen that I discovered that I had bought this thing like in college, and I just had it around.
See, there you go. That's why Matt Cordell was talking about it, because he's the bamboo pen guy. You guys are sharing the same kind of tools.
Yeah, he's going to try. Well, I don't know. I won't say that. He's probably going to try Crayola after this.
Oh, what? That's awesome. No.
But
bamboo pen. Dang.
No, but yeah. he's like a big ink guy, so he kind of got me back into ink.
Oh, cool.
After, you know, I did Interrupting Chicken in a different style, and Mousarella, and I was like, I need to do some. I tried to do Old Mama Squirrel kind of in the same realm with paint and layers of stuff, and then I was like, you know what, I have to just do line. So for that book, I used a pencil, and I just dipped it into the ink.
Oh.
Which is nice. Great. And then, because, like, when you run out of ink, it starts using the pencil lead.
Yeah.
So you get this really gray line, which is, I don't know, I think that's really cool.
It sounds to me like, David, you've got this sensibility of just, like, experimentation in your illustration and in just I don't know, maybe even just in your approach to making art. I mean, each of your books have their own feel. They have a feel of trying a different medium or I don't know, just exploring a new look. So it doesn't surprise me that you do pencil dipped in ink, but it also feels like I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, well, I mean, why would I don't know who does that? Maybe people. Maybe someone does that. It took me like my whole life to discover that. So it's just a weird thing that has to happen when you're sitting there with a bunch of art supplies and you're just like, "What if I do this?" You know? I mean, it's like a combination of what's in your house and like what you're thinking at the moment and where you're sitting and everything just comes together. You know, that's it. Or maybe it's desperation. Like, how can I make this book look the way it's supposed to look? You know?
Yeah. So I mean, because when you're talking like Interrupting Chicken, you've got your, whenever we launch into the fairy tale, you've got like that great, like, I don't know if you pen or what you did to do the illustration on that, but it definitely is fitting to telling the story, and it breaks the style that you use with the dad reading the story to son. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I kind of agonized over how to make it look like old-fashioned engraving.
Yeah. There but, you go, yeah. But
I don't do that. I mean, that's, like, really, really tight and painstaking and, you know, engraving is a serious pursuit. So, so I tried to do that at first. I tried to make it very, almost like a woodcut kind of thing, and it just looked so stiff, and I was like, forget this, I'm just gonna draw with pen, my favorite kind of pen, and smudge it and everything and make it loose but also seem somehow old-fashioned. So that's where, like, I don't know how that happened really, but it just, it was loose but also old-fashioned.
Well, it worked out, looks gorgeous, and you know, you got a Caldecott honor for it as well, so that means tons of people thought it looked gorgeous and looked interesting and new and wonderful and fitting to the story.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of nifty, yes.
Yeah, totally nifty. Are you kidding? And it looks really. I like that.
Always grateful for that. Like, yeah, for those, like, those teachers and librarians who decided that I should be one of the honorees that year.
Yeah, that was a great year too. Yeah, good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you come from with art? Are you from an art school? Is this something that you have sort of, I don't know, taught yourself? Have you always been drawing?
Yeah, I have. As long as I can remember, I've always been drawing and telling stories and,
oh, that's cool.
You know, like just inventing things and building little cities out of blocks, you know. And I did go to art school. I went to Parsons, New York. Ended up, I did illustration because my dad wanted me to do graphic design like him and make a good living or, you know, have more job security. And I wanted to be a painter like Degas or something with pastels.
Yeah.
And he was like, graphic design. And so I split the difference and decided to do illustration. It was kind of a combination of both. And and actually it worked out wonderfully because illustration has a lot to do with telling a story and, you know, bringing someone from point A to point B. So that ended up being, you know, sort of combining all my different passions for telling stories and making art.
Were you working on, did you like launch right into writing for children straight out of school, or did that come later?
Well, in my senior year at school, I decided kind of on a whim, I decided to take children's book illustration as an elective. Huh. I was just sitting there with the form of all the different electives, and this little voice just said, like, maybe you should try children's book illustration. So I checked that box, and I sent it in, and my teacher was Pat Cummings.
He's
a wonderful author, illustrator, teacher. And so I wrote, my first assignment was to kind of give a synopsis of a story that we wanted to work on in the class, because we were going to develop it from start to finish in the class up to a dummy.
Oh, okay.
You know, from a concept to a dummy. So I sent her, I had this idea that I had kind of been knocking around. So I was like, you know, the interconnectedness of all people, that's what I want to write my book about. So she was kind of
a little
like,
ambitious.
That's a little, touchy feely something. And then the next week I brought in the story. And at the end of the class, she said, you know, David, I want to see you after class. So she was like, I think I can sell this story right off the bat. Like, I could take this to an editor and sell it.
Shoot.
And I was like, I kind of sat down. I remember sitting down when she said that. I was just kind of like, what? Yeah. Because I was just in my whole, I was kind of oblivious. I was in my college mode, and I was like, la-di-da, you know, anything. I'm not in the real world right now. And then all of a sudden the real world kind of came in.
It came to you, yeah.
And I was like, wow, okay. Sure, go ahead. You know, she was like, can I show it to somebody? And I said, sure. So she sent it to an editor at Harper, and it was like an immediate response back. And I think I had to write an ending for it, actually. So I wrote an ending in a couple of days. And then she sent it in. They were interested in it, and I went in there. So while school was going on, I was going in to see someone at Harper. Like, but they weren't quite sure about the artwork because I didn't really have a style at the time. I was a student,
yeah,
and I was just playing around with all kinds of influences. And so I went there, and they were like, well, this art is good, but it's not exactly what we're looking for. And then I came back the next month, and I was like, how about this art, you know? And it went on for a while, for like 6 months. And then finally they said, well, is it okay if we get someone else to illustrate it? And I said, no, I want to illustrate it myself. So it's kind of like the deal breaker at the time. And I was just getting into this place of like trying to please someone else with my art, which is not where you should be coming from necessarily.
Mm.
But I was a student, and I was in a vulnerable time with my art. So, you know, having all this pressure on it was too much for me at that point. And I put it aside. And in 2013, I think it was, Because Amelia Smiled came out. And that was the book that I had been showing them. So
that was the one.
It actually took me like 13 years to figure out how to illustrate that book.
Wow. That's a great book.
Thank you.
That's a really great book. That's the one.
That was it. That was the story. It changed quite a bit, but the basic story is the same.
That's a great connection story. That's a great, I don't know, like butterfly effect kind of story. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, I like that you take it all over the world too.
Concept. Yeah. One of the things we changed when we actually went to finish it was to make it more global, just to make it more well-rounded, I guess.
No, it's nice. Yeah, it's a beautiful story. Oh, wow. Cool. And neat that was the thing from college that, like, on a whim you took the children's illustration class, and then it...
Yeah, and Pat was good. Yeah. You know, she was doing this as a job, and I thought, wow, maybe I could... do this as a job, because I love picture books, and I had kind of forgotten that over the course of high school and college and everything. I guess I got too cool for that. for picture books.
I'm so glad that Pat Cummings came into your life. You got too cool for picture books. But now you're totally cool for picture books.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm not afraid to say it.
No way. Especially when you're writing books like this. I mean, you've got kids that you get to see all the time that love your stories. I mean, who's too cool for that, to get to see kids, you know, become readers because of the things that you're creating? That's such a huge, I guess, honor, but also responsibility to make sure that you are sharing the very best of you with these kids. Yeah.
Yep. That's true. I never quite get used to that, how they're so excited about everything. And I mean, kids are like that. They're generous with their attention, and you know, they're patient with you. If you drop your marker or something, they always pick it up for you. They're such kind people. And yeah, it's kind of wild to go in there and they're like, "Hi, David Ezerstein," and then like you see them in the hall after the presentation or something. They're like, "It's David Ezerstein."
And they're like, I grabbed this napkin from the lunchroom. Can you sign it? Kids are kind of the best. Really, they just are kind of the best.
They are. That's true.
Well, it's been awesome to talk to you tonight. And I am so thankful and excited that you came by to talk about Tad and Dad and the other stuff that you got going on, because it's great stuff. And your new book is one that I know is going to resonate with a lot of people, but especially a lot of dads. And so I guess on behalf of dads, as a dadvocate myself, thank you for sharing it with all of us.
Thanks so much, Matthew.
Hey, before I let you go, can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
All right, man. That is that I am assembling an all-star KidLit Dream Team kickball tournament. And David, I'd love to know what one person from the KidLit world, alive or past, you'd want on your team and why.
I would like to have James Marshall on my team, because I think we would be like the two guys out in the on the side of the field talking about funny things while the game is going on, basically. Like, we would be bad at it, but yet have a great time.
Always good to have good company. A good laugh is always worth it. Well, David, thank you again for coming on. I'm excited to celebrate your release, and I wish you a whole lot of fun as you connect with even more readers.
Thanks, Matthew. Take care.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes through stars or reviews. Doing so not only gives me helpful feedback, it also helps to bring new listeners to the podcast, and that's a very good thing. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's KOKO Sleep, and I'll see you there.